Welcome to the Hackberry House of Chosun. My name is Bob, reading today from The Scarlet Threads, Part 3. We're talking about how Babylon, the mystery called Babylon, is pervasive throughout history. And even in our American history, there's something about the Roman system that has come over to the United States and is interfering, perhaps, in our government. We know that Abraham Lincoln was killed by John Wilkes Booth, but he had an accomplice, perhaps the mastermind of the entire plot to kill the president and take over the government at that time. Read the history yourself. John Surratt was brought to trial, but you've got to decide whether he was brought to justice. The records of the trial are available for perusal. Due to one of the many loopholes in America's legal system, the hung jury, and a later decision to drop the case, John Surratt is released. And many years later, he dies in America, a successful businessman. Let's back up a bit. After he stayed in Montreal a while, and supposedly being ordered by the bishop there not to return to Washington, where his mother is about to be hanged, since there, he says, is no justice in Washington, Surratt is shipped off to England. But the ship's doctor, an L.J. McMillan was his name, supposedly seeking the reward being offered for Surratt's capture, befriends John. But Surratt becomes wary. He gets off the ship in Londonderry, Ireland, finds his own way to Liverpool. Meanwhile, McMillan has reported to the vice consul, a guy named Wilding, of his finding. Wilding contacts Washington. These are actual records. This is number 538, United States Consulate, Liverpool, September 27, 1865. Sir, yesterday, information was given to me that Surratt, one of the persons implicated in the conspiracy to murder Mr. Lincoln, was in Liverpool, or expected there within a day or two. I took the affidavit of the person who gave me the information. That's from A. Wilding, vice consul. No response. So let's try again. Number 539, United States Consulate, Liverpool, September 30, 1865. Sir, since my dispatch, number 538, the supposed Surratt has arrived in Liverpool and is now staying at the oratory of the Roman Catholic Church of the Holy Cross. His appearance indicates him to be about 21 years old, tolerably good-looking. According to reports, Mrs. Surratt, his mother, was a devout Catholic, and I learned that clergymen of that persuasion on their way to and from America frequently lodge at the oratory. I can, of course, do nothing further in the matter without Mr. Adams' instruction and a warrant. If it be Surratt, such a wretch ought not to escape. Wilding. Finally, the reply. Listen to it well. 5 months has changed the mood of Washington. It happens all the time. People just say, well, let's forget about it. We don't know. We can't prove it. Number 476, Department of State, Washington, October 13, 1865. Sir, your dispatches have been received. In reply to your number 539, I have to inform you that upon a consultation with the Secretary of War and the Judge Advocate General, it is thought advisable that no action be taken in regard to the arrest of the supposed John Surratt at present. That's from W. Hunter, Acting Secretary. Now, is something fishy here? Later at the Surratt trial, Judge Pierpont is forced to say these words. My friends on the other side have undertaken to arraign the government of the United States against the prisoner. Oh, they have talked very loudly and eloquently about this great government of 25 or 30 million people being engaged in trying to bring a conviction on one poor young man. and have treated it as though it was a hostile act, as though two parties were litigants before you, the one trying to beat the other. Is it possible that it, and this is the judge still speaking, that it has come to this, that in the city of Washington, where the president has been murdered, that when under the form of law and before a court and jury of 12 men, an investigation is made to ascertain whether the prisoner is guilty of this great crime, that the government is to be charged as seeking his blood, and its officers as lapping their tongues in the blood of the innocent. He's quoting what they were saying. I quote the language exactly, he says. It is a shocking thing to hear. What is the purpose of a government? What is the business of a government? Still quoting the judge. According to the gentleman's notion, when a murder is committed, the government should not do anything towards ascertaining who perpetrated the murder. And if the government did undertake to investigate the matter and endeavor to find out whether the man charged with the crime is guilty or not, the government and all connected with it must expect to be assailed as bloodhounds of the law and as seeking to lap their tongues in the blood of the innocent. What is government for? It is constituted for your protection. What would you do without it? McCarty, who wrote the book about all of this, summarizes the trial proceedings. There were 85 witnesses, 96 in rebuttal. The hearing began June 17, 1867, and closed July 26, 1867. The case went to the jury August 7. The jury brought in a report that they stood about even for conviction and acquittal, with no prospect of reaching an agreement. Surratt was remanded to jail. His attorneys asked that he be released on bail, which was refused by the court. The following September, he was indicted on the charge of engaging in rebellion. He was admitted to bail on this charge in the amount of $20,000, which still stands. A second indictment was found against him, but the district attorney entered a nolle prosequi on this. The prisoner was finally released and permitted to go free on a technicality, an omission of three words in the indictment, namely, quote, was a fugitive, end of quotes. So that's why he's not in the encyclopedias. An amazing story. But the Secretary of War and a host of others disagree with the dissenting jurors, the various judges, the whole legal system. You know, minorities can be right, quite often are right. McCarty's book can be balanced out by another book called Confederate Courier, a novel-style book that weaves the opinion of the author, who is Helen Jones Campbell, into a believable tale that makes the reader sympathize with little Johnny, John Surratt. But Ms. Campbell, in her acknowledgments, lists several Catholic priests as the source of her documentation for the story, and it would seem that this is not the way to find the ultimate in objective facts. Perhaps the modern jury, called society, will remain divided on John's innocence, but the agreed-upon facts will suffice for me anyway. Here are the facts. There was a conspiracy. The Surratts were involved in it and were close to John Wilkes Booth. Catholic priests protected and helped to escape one whom they knew to be charged with conspiracy to murder the President of the United States. These are facts. He was placed in a military position by the Pope of Rome following his escape. And at the end of his life, John Surratt burned all the records involving this matter. What do you make of it? Pure coincidence? Or an all-out plot by the Vatican to destroy America? A plot used and approved of by Rome? It's something to think about. as we investigate the mystery called Babylon. We have one more section to go. We won't do that one this time, but we will next. Section 49, about Douglas, you know that name, Davis, yes, and Pius the Ninth. Definitely you know that name by now. We're still in the 19th century America, and what indeed interesting things happened during that time. Thank you so much for being present today. I hope you'll be present next time. This is the Hackberry House of Chosun. Lord willing, we get to talk again real soon. Bye-bye.